Hello, my name is Kurt Joman, and I am the author of the book, A Soliton and Its Own Bions, Awareness and Mind. In this recording, I will read a specific part of my book, and during this reading, whenever I say the word okay, that marks the beginning of added commentary by me that is not in my book. At the time of this recording, it is 2018, and I am 62 years old. Okay, I'm now going to read footnote 157. This is a large footnote of about 6,400 words. It probably would have been a little better if I had a statement up at the front of this footnote saying, what are these 10 emotions? But here I've written them out. So I could read what they are. Okay, so basically I'm going to describe and give the purpose of each of the following 10 emotions: anger, joy, the laughing feeling, depression, happiness, fear, loneliness, the crying feeling, sadness, and anxiety. Okay, so at this point, I'm going to start reading the beginning of footnote 157. Quote, the following table lists 10 emotions. Each of these emotions has its own very specific and unique feeling, which can vary in intensity, but is always the same feeling in terms of how it feels to the awareness. Each of these emotions is distinct and separate from the other emotions and all other feelings. And each of these emotions, assuming one has a non-zero allocation for it, has its own dedicated, non-shared allocation of awareness particle input channels. Although some people have a non-zero allocation for each of these 10 emotions, there are also other people who do not, including myself. In my own case, I'm 50 years old as I write this sentence in 2006. I have yet to feel 4 of the 10 emotions listed below: fear, joy, loneliness, and sadness. End quote for the moment, because I'll comment, or maybe I should have just said okay to begin this comment. Right, and that's still the case. So I've never... Here I am, I'm 62 years old as I'm doing this audio recording of this footnote here. And right, I still have yet to actually experience what fear feels like, or joy, or loneliness, or sadness. So what I wrote there when I was 50 years old is still true today, and now that I'm 62 years old. Okay, so let's get back to quoting this footnote. Right. So I left off after saying I have yet to feel 4 of the 10 emotions listed below: fear, joy, loneliness, and sadness. This implies that for my entire life so far, I've had a zero allocation for these 4 emotions. It's possible that I had a non-zero allocation for one or more of these 4 emotions during my infancy and or early childhood, but I don't have any conscious memories to support this possibility. Okay, so the first entry in this list of 10 emotions now, and I'll just go in order from first entry to the 10th entry. Okay, the first entry is depression. So, quote, assuming one has an adequate allocation to feel it, depression is perhaps the worst feeling to have. Given the conditions under which it appears, and also its potential to be chronic, it seems that the depression feeling is sent to the awareness as a notification or signal that the unconscious mind is frustrated with the current situation. The purpose of the depression feeling is to provoke the awareness to change the current situation, because depression is something that the awareness will want to avoid feeling. The immobilizing quality of depression makes it harder for the awareness to continue with its life as usual. As long as the situation remains unchanged, the depression can remain, becoming chronic. Changing the situation in a way that ends the depression depends on the situation. In my own life, I've been depressed 3 times, including twice because of romantic disappointments with women. And in each of those 2 cases, while sitting in my chair, immobilized with the depression feeling, I realized things weren't going to turn out as I wanted. In other words, I wasn't going to get the girl there. And it was time to give up and move on. Oh, right, that thing that I suddenly interjected, that was me. I should have said okay to indicate and then back to the quote. Okay, so let's reread that sentence or part of a sentence. I realized things weren't going to turn out as I wanted, and it was time to give up and move on, which is what I did. Thus, I changed the situation by simply giving up, and it worked insofar as my depression ended. In each of those 2 cases, I was depressed for about 2 hours. Similarly, much later in my life, when I was depressed after realizing that the USA media had successfully lied to me and much of the world about a specific 20th century historical matter, I accepted that I had been deceived, and I resolved to study how I was deceived and learn about that experience. In this case, I was depressed for about 1 hour. Okay, so let me just comment a little. Okay, so that's my entry for depression, not that long. Of course, I had already, in an earlier footnote, covered depression in the case of my niece, Melanie, and I give more sort of background to the feeling. Okay, happiness. Quote, my own experience with the happiness feeling, described in a previous footnote, is that it is a very nice and pleasant feeling. Based on my own experience and the experience of others, happiness is given to the awareness as a reward for actions that are life-sustaining or life-perpetuating. Thus, the purpose of the happiness feeling is to encourage life-sustaining and life-perpetuating actions. I have heard of people crying from being so happy. In my own case, I have yet to feel a strong or intense happiness, so my current happiness allocation is probably too small for me to ever cry with happiness. My current crying feeling allocation is probably adequate, but both allocations are needed. However, I did ask my niece, Melanie, about crying from being so happy, and she said that she herself has cried from being so happy. So as long as one has a big enough allocation for the happiness feeling, and also a sufficient allocation for the crying feeling, it can happen. It sounds rather blissful, being so happy. Okay, the next emotion is fear. Quote, I've already described in a previous footnote a conversation I had with a friend who repeatedly made the point that fear has a protective purpose. Thus, the purpose of the fear feeling is to warn the awareness of potential danger. More specifically, the fear feeling is a signal to the awareness that the unconscious mind judges the object of the fear feeling, whatever one is feeling fearful of, as something that is potentially threatening or endangering in some way to either oneself or others or both. In answer to my question as of where the fear feeling lies on the pleasure-pain scale, another friend, my brother-in-law, age 60, described it as follows. Quote, unpleasant to extremely painful, depending on the situation, close quote. He also said in answer to further questioning that depending on the situation, he has felt fear for others, including feeling fear for the well-being of people who were neither close nor well-known to him. However, in general, the closer his relationship to a person, the more intensely he can feel fear if that person's well-being is endangered. Also, most of his experience with the fear feeling has been in situations where he himself felt threatened or endangered in some way, with his own personal safety and well-being at apparent risk. Regarding fear, on June 20, 2006, I received an interesting email from a 64-year-old man in Texas who described his own experience with fear as follows. Quote it with his permission. Okay, now begins this block quote of what this fellow said in his email. Okay, quote, "Fear has been my most driving force since I can remember. I was a bedwetter. Fear is probably responsible for most major decisions in my life. I quit smoking because of fear. I quit drinking because of fear. I avoided many risk-prone pleasures because of fear. The absolute most fearful moment in my life was when I first laid eyes on the lady that would become my wife, and she stared me down." Okay, that's me laughing. Okay, let's get back to the quote. Okay, but okay. "I felt a yellow streak run down my I felt a yellow streak run down my back that I had only read about before. Sheer, utter, debilitating fear." And he put fear in capital letters. Okay. Resuming. Okay, let's continue with. Okay, let me calm down a moment. I hadn't read this part. Okay, to prepare myself. Okay, it's kind of struck me as funny. I'm a fellow who has never experienced the emotion. It just sounds kind of funny that would be, you know, the most fearful moment of your life, meeting your future wife. That probably also why I ended up putting this in. It just seems so strange. Yet his email struck me as completely legitimate. Right, okay, so let's get back to, okay, so I had finished saying sheer, utter, debilitating fear. Okay, so now let me continue with this quote. "I have never experienced that level of fear since, but fear, even heavy duty levels, have always been ready and waiting. I always despised myself for being so afflicted with fear, but after reading your page on fear," and then I put in brackets here in the text of the footnote, he is referring to the 10th edition of this book, specifically the above-mentioned previous footnote where I describe the conversation I had with a friend about fear having a protective purpose. Okay, close bracket. Now back to what he said in his email to me. I mean, the fellow who, you know, this Texan guy. Wait a minute, was he Texas? Yeah, I said a 64-year-old man in Texas. Okay, let me get back to quoting him. Okay, quote, "I am now rethinking my attitude. Maybe I should be thankful for having been born with such a massive dose of fear. My life has been more or less blessed and charmed somewhat." Close quote. Okay, so that's what this fellow said, this Texas guy. And he was that's something else. I'll just throw it out there. And I noticed this in at least one relative when he became older, and in myself as I became older, and so on. You become more talkative, I guess, when you realize your life's over, whether you're retired or something else, but you're getting old, you realize the bulk of your life is already behind you and such. And I don't know. It just seems, you know, at least we European-type peoples or whatever, we just get a little more talkative and open about our experiences in life. So I don't think this guy would have wrote me this email if instead of 64 years old when he sent me this email, he was 34. You know, even though he presumably would have already been living with, you know, probably at least a decade or two of this heavy-duty fear, as he refers to it. Oh, okay. So let's get back to reading this footnote. Okay, so the next entry, the next emotion in this list of 10 emotions here is joy. So I'm now going to read what the footnote says about the joy emotion. "My source for information about the joy feeling is my brother-in-law. During a phone conversation on February 22nd, 2006, I was asking him where the fear feeling lies on the pleasure-pain scale, because after reviewing what I had written so far about emotions in this footnote, I realized I was missing that detail. However, after getting his answer about fear, I then asked him if I was missing anything from my then list of 8 emotions, which I read to him, and he said I was missing joy. Initially, I was skeptical about this claim of a joy feeling. As far as I know, I haven't felt joy myself. But after detailed questioning and note-taking, I realized a few things. Joy is a real feeling that my brother-in-law has felt at different times, and it's not the same as the happiness feeling. Although he has an allocation for this joy feeling, apparently he has a 0 allocation for the happiness feeling. Because his idea of the happiness feeling is the same kind of intellectual idea of happiness that I used to have before I got an allocation for the happiness feeling. His idea of happiness is when everything is going well in his life, then he is happy. Fortunately, in sharp contrast to his ignorance about happiness being a real feeling, he has a lot to say about joy being a real feeling. About the joy feeling, here are my notes which I took during that phone conversation, edited for improved readability and clarity. These notes record my brother-in-law's answer to my various questions. Quote, other English words for the joy feeling, elation, thrilled, cloud nine. Regarding what triggers the joy feeling, he says there are 2 essential requirements. It has to be something unexpected, and it has to be something good that affects you or someone you love directly with no downside. Regarding where joy lies on the pleasure-pain scale, he said it is highly pleasurable, intensely pleasurable. When it triggers, it's usually a 9 or 10 on the pleasure scale. 10 is max pleasure. The better the outcome and the more unexpected it is, the more intense the joy. Okay, I have to break in here. And wow, this really sounds like a great emotion, but I never got it. I've never felt it. On the other hand, it's an offset for the fear emotion. So I don't have the fear emotion, so not surprisingly, I don't have the joy emotion either. Okay, so let's get back to reading this. But I mean, considering that, I'd rather not have the fear emotion than have the fear emotion along with the joy emotion. That's just my own personal feeling as someone who has never experienced, at least in this incarnation, I assume in some past or, you know, maybe even my most recent incarnation, you know, because let's face it, fear has practical value. I've gotten fine through this life without it myself, as far as I know. On the other hand, in many ways, I've had an easy life. So, oh, okay, I'm wasting too much time. Let's get back to the text. Quote, joy is personal. He hasn't felt joy for unexpected good things happening to others. Events in his own life that he remembers as causing him joy. Okay, quote, just today, February 22nd, 2006, when a traffic ticket was dismissed, he had to make a court appearance for a moving violation by his car. Okay, but now I give a paragraph that's in the brackets, so that means I added it after I wrote my notes. I guess the timing of my phone call was fortunate because even though I didn't know about the traffic ticket or court appearance when I called, he had felt intense joy earlier that day as a result of that traffic ticket being dismissed. That made it easy for him to realize that I had missed the joy emotion when I read him my then list of 8 emotions and asked if I had missed anything. Okay. So there are, Now I realized when I wrote that, you know, I just assumed our minds, you know, there was some sort of unconscious communication. I didn't think it was just luck or, you know, good fortune or whatever. Right, I already read this line that says events in his own life that he remembers as causing him joy. So I just took care of the court appearance one. And okay, so here's the next item in this list of, I see, four items. The first time he won a wrestling match. In high school, he was on the wrestling team. The time he got a date with a desirable girl who he thought would turn him down. Last item. He was thrilled the first time he skied down a real hill, but it wasn't that unexpected. He said he uses the word thrill to mean a joy that is less intense because the outcome was not completely unexpected. Okay, so that's the end of this list of four examples, or, as I said, events in his own life that he remembers as causing him joy. Okay, so let's get back down here. Okay, so now we're back to joy heading. We're now back to my my own commentary on the joy emotion. Okay, let's pause a moment. Quote, so, given the above information about the joy feeling, what is its purpose? Initially, I was puzzled about its purpose, but it now seems rather obvious to me. The purpose of the joy feeling is to encourage risk-taking by rewarding it with the joy feeling when a good outcome results. Apparently, one of the effects of the joy feeling is that it can act as an antidote for the fear feeling, because my brother-in-law, who also has an allocation for fear, said how he felt some fear while skiing down that hill the first time, but he knew that the joy feeling was waiting for him if he succeeded. In the English language, for those who experience the joy feeling, an often used phrase for it is, quote, adrenaline rush, especially when they talk about a physical activity or sport that has an element of physical danger. For those individuals who actively seek the joy feeling from dangerous sports and/or dangerous physical activities, a common phrase for such persons is, quote, adrenaline junkie, close quote. Examples of dangerous, actually, or okay, let me just mention, I said quote, close quote, so on. It was actually italicized, adrenaline rush earlier in the paragraph, and adrenaline junkie, I actually italicized it. I guess I could say quotes when I hit italics. As I think about it, I don't see anything wrong with doing that because, of course, I can't convey italics through, you know, just speaking. So unless I say, you know, would it be better to say begin italics, end italics? I think quote, end quote, or close quote fits a little better. Okay, enough. Let's get back to this. Okay, so I was just talking about adrenaline rush and adrenaline junkies. Okay, for those who experience the joy feeling, you know, when they do engage in dangerous physical sports of certain kinds. Well, okay. Huh, let's get back to this. Okay, quote, examples of dangerous sports include mountain climbing, mountain biking, skydiving, paragliding, bungee jumping, and kayaking down rapids. Also, at least some adrenaline junkies are drawn to the non-sport activity of riding roller coasters. For example, the following are the notes that I wrote on January 31st, 2012. This is where I finally added something new. So pretty much almost just about everything, and probably most of what's still to be read in this footnote was back on in the 11th edition from 2006. But this is something I added for the 12th edition because I had some new data on this joy emotion subject. Okay, By the way, right, I'm going to talk about roller coasters. I'm not a roller coaster rider ever. Well, I did try. I guess the biggest roller coaster I tried was there's something. It's something in like Space Mountain or whatever, Disney World in Orlando. And I forget, I think maybe that was soon, maybe within a year or so of moving down here to attend grad school, I mean, down to Florida in 1988. And as I recall, when I got off that roller, first of all, I never had any attraction to roller coasters. And I mean, they look, they're just way too wild for me. Anyway, after I got off that thing, I mean, the whole experience, and of course, I don't have the joy emotion, so I couldn't get what this woman I'm going to talk about in a moment in this quote here. Whatever, so that was the worst I've ever been on a roller coaster. That was the last, because that was just way too extreme, and there, I mean, it was all kind of in the dark. So I think I would have felt even worse than I did. Yeah, I had to sit down after I got off it. I felt like I might vomit. So I just sort of collapsed down on I sat down, basically. Everyone else is getting off the thing, and I just sort of sat down. I almost felt like I might collapse or vomit or such, because whatever. So that was my experience with the worst roller coaster I've been on, and that was pretty much the last time. I mean, maybe I could handle a little kiddie roller coaster or whatever, but the real thing, it's so I'm definitely not one who gets it. Okay, so getting back to the footnote, drawn to the non-sport activity of riding roller coasters. For example, the following are the notes that I wrote on January 31st, 2012, after talking with a 23-year-old woman who said she had ridden roller coasters hundreds of times and that she had been on more than a dozen different big roller coasters. Her name is Jennifer, and I refer to her in these notes, edited for improved readability and clarity, as Jen. She was one of the nurses I had helping me care for my father at home after my mother had died. Jen was very intelligent, and I found her very sexually attractive, and that is why I talked with her a lot until I was worn down by her repeated rejections of my advances because, as she repeatedly told me, I was too old enough to be her father, and so on. Oh, well, such is the situation for old men. I was 56 then. Young women don't want us as potential fathers of their future children, which is understandable. Okay, so now I'm going to quote the notes I wrote regarding Jen and roller coasters. Okay, so quote, Jen says she always feels some fear and anxiety when she first gets on a roller coaster, and her fear and anxiety feelings continue while she waits for the roller coaster to start moving. This wait can be as long as a minute or two, and once the roller coaster starts moving, her fear and anxiety feelings are continuing until the roller coaster reaches the first peak, before the first drop-off of that roller coaster ride. And Jen says the emotional intensity of her fear and anxiety is at about a medium high on her intensity scale. From the beginning when she first gets on the roller coaster and continuing until the roller coaster reaches that first peak. Oh, okay, I misread that. I read it like there was a continuation there. That's the end of the sentence for this paragraph. Oh, okay, so next paragraph. Once the roller coaster is at that first peak and starts its fall downward and picks up speed, it is at that moment when Jen first starts feeling the joy feeling. Jen calls it an adrenaline rush. And the intensity of this joy feeling for her is variable during the remainder of that roller coaster ride, with her intensity peaks occurring at the different loops, twists, and turns. At the end of the roller coaster ride, As soon as Jen is unbuckled and off the roller coaster, and her feet are on the platform alongside the roller coaster, Jen feels overjoyed, a strong joy feeling. Okay, so that ends my notes there as to what Jen said about her experience with roller coasters. Okay, so now I go back, and there's just one little paragraph left before the end of what I wrote for this joy emotion. Okay, so quote, "I don't really know about the prevalence of the joy feeling in the general population or in the two genders. However, given its purpose to encourage risk-taking, it seems likely that, on average, it is more heavily allocated to men than women. Also, as I think about it, on average, men like to gamble more than women. And perhaps in many cases, a man who likes to gamble also has an allocation for the joy feeling, and he knows that if he wins against the odds, he will get a reward, the joy feeling." Okay, so that's the end of the joy feeling. Okay, so the next emotion is the loneliness emotion, and that's perhaps the shortest entry here, just two small paragraphs, which I'll read now. Quote, "According to my niece Melanie, the loneliness feeling can be loneliness for the company of others in general or loneliness for a specific person or kind of person, and in particular, loneliness for a mate. She said that loneliness is closest to the depression feeling in how it feels, so this means that loneliness is a painful, unpleasant feeling. Given the very narrow and specific focus of the loneliness feeling, its purpose is very obvious. The purpose of the loneliness feeling is to promote and encourage socialization and mating." Okay, so that's it for loneliness. Now we come to the anger emotion. Okay, so I'm now going to read what I wrote in footnote 157 for the anger emotion. Okay, quote, "I have felt anger many times in my life, and I have felt anger at many different intensity levels, ranging from feeling just a little angry all the way up to feeling so intensely angry that I am almost completely taken over by it, and it's a real struggle for me to retain control over myself. So, I think I have an anger allocation that is at least average for a man of my nationality, and perhaps substantially above average. Just yesterday, January 22nd, 2006, I got moderately angry, and after I got home, I thought about it a lot, because I was in the middle of writing this footnote about emotions. Here was the triggering cause. I had to drive my mother to a building on the other side of town, and I thought she knew where it was exactly. But it turns out that she didn't know, and she had me driving around in circles for roughly 10 minutes before I got angry about it. In reaction to my own anger, I decided to stop the car and park nearby, with the idea of getting out of the car and just walking into the nearby buildings and asking as needed until we got the right building that she wanted, which is what we did. So my getting angry served a useful purpose because it provoked me into changing the current situation of my driving around in circles, which was getting us nowhere. As I thought about it later that day, I realized that anger is similar to depression in that both feelings are expressions of frustration with the current situation. The anger feeling, like the depression feeling, is sent to the awareness with the purpose of provoking the awareness to change the current situation. However, these two different feelings seem to cover different kinds of situations, with very little overlap, if any, between them. Regarding what anger feels like, it's definitely an unpleasant feeling, but not very unpleasant. On the pleasure-pain scale, I would have to say that anger, even when I felt extreme anger, was at most only a little painful. Regarding gender difference, anger is more common among men than women. Comparing anger with depression, the low pain of anger allows one to change the current situation quickly, whereas the immobilizing quality of depression has the opposite effect. Thus, given that anger is more common in men and depression is more common in women, this adds to the perception of men being active and women being passive. Okay, so that's the end of the what I wrote on anger in that footnote. Now we come to the laughing feeling. Quote, English seems to lack a single word for the feeling that goes along with laughing. I'm using the phrase laughing feeling for this feeling. Note that words like funny, humorous, and comical refer to things that cause this feeling, but not the feeling itself. The reason English lacks a word for this laughing feeling is basically the same reason English lacks a word for the crying feeling. The close association of that feeling with an easily seen outward action, laughing and crying, respectively. This means that the feeling is implicit, dependent on the context when one uses words for that outward action. For example, saying, "That made me laugh," implies that one felt the laughing feeling when laughing. Although English is lacking, there is still a need for being able to refer to the laughing feeling directly, and likewise for the crying feeling, because one can have that feeling without its associated outward action. As I know from my own experience, for example, I can feel that something is funny, feeling the laughing feeling, without actually laughing about it, although sometimes I do laugh. The more intense the laughing feeling is, the more impetus there is to laugh. However, at less intense levels, the laughing feeling can result in just a smile or perhaps some chuckling or no outward show at all. Like anger, the laughing feeling is a feeling that I have a lot of experience with. I think I have a laughing feeling allocation that's about average for a man of my nationality. On the pleasure-pain scale, the laughing feeling is mildly pleasurable. Perhaps you've heard the expression that goes like this, quote, "I laughed so hard that it hurt," closed quote. Well, that has happened to me at least a few times in my life, and the pain referred to is just ordinary body pain caused by the physical strain of prolonged hard laughing. The laughing feeling itself is never painful. The laughing feeling has a purpose, of course. So what is its purpose? Arthur Schopenhauer said that finding something funny involves detecting a misapprehension. My Webster's Dictionary defines misapprehension as a failure to interpret correctly, a misunderstanding. I remember analyzing Schopenhauer's explanation after I first learned about it back in my mid-20s. I analyzed examples of things I found funny, and I could see that Schopenhauer's explanation was correct. Thus, the purpose of the laughing feeling is to signal the awareness that there is a misapprehension. And the existence of a misapprehension is also signaled to others who see or hear oneself laughing. In preparation for writing about the laughing feeling, for the last few days I've been paying attention to things I found funny. For example, in a fan-sub non-anime Japanese TV romance comedy series that I downloaded and was watching in 2006, here was a scene I found moderately funny. The main character is in a room with several of his friends, and after a setup which I've already forgotten, we see him ranting and raving to his friends a completely wrong understanding of something that happened in the previous scene. Of course, for the audience to find that misapprehension funny, we have to be shown in advance what the correct interpretation is. This was done in previous scenes, so that we know with certainty that that main character has gotten things completely wrong. This comedic strategy was used several times in that romance comedy. The main character was set up for a misunderstanding, but the audience is given the correct interpretation in advance, and then we see that main character emphatically voicing his misunderstanding to others. A misapprehension can happen in many different ways. For example, an expectation that proves to be wrong is one kind of misapprehension. Last night I watched an anime that had the following scene that I found funny. The main character is told by a second character that he has to join an ongoing battle taking place in a nearby park. These two characters are watching the battle on a video screen. The main character agrees with that suggestion, and the next thing we see is a rocket that out of nowhere springs up from the floor, closes around that main character, and then flies him away while he yells and acts surprised at what is happening. I was surprised too, and I laughed a bit. Of course, I was simply using my own expectation for how that main character was going to get to that park, and my expectation did not include a rocket. Thus, I was laughing at my own misapprehension, which was also the misapprehension of that main character, since he was yelling and acting surprised. This comedic strategy of an expectation that proves to be wrong has been excessively overused when it comes to exploiting the expectations that we all have of how people move the parts of their body. For example, in past years on USA TV, I have seen way too many exaggerated physical movements for me to still laugh at such things. The already mentioned Japanese romance comedy series had several such attempts at humor. For example, one scene had two guys in an office spreading out on the floor many pages from a report they had to prepare. Then we see another character walk into that office, and without seeing those pages, he starts to walk on them until he is loudly told to get off, at which point we see him react with wildly exaggerated movements, trying to get off those pages on the floor, with the end result that he makes a complete mess of them. I guess if I hadn't already seen that kind of joke, wild exaggerated movements, 1,000 times before on USA TV, I might have laughed at it. In addition to the above examples, a few days ago during my web browsing, I came across a joke that made me laugh out loud, even though I was in a room by myself. The joke was part of the write-up for a fundraising auction of a single t-shirt by the file-sharing guys who run the Pirate Bay, which is located in Sweden. The winning bidder has to fly to Sweden at his own expense to collect the t-shirt, but he gets to meet, talk, and have drinks with the Pirate Bay crew. The joke was in the form of a question-answer pair, with a quasi-serious question being answered with a pseudo-serious joke as follows. Question: if I were to win this shirt and fly out to see you, wouldn't you then, in return, have to fly back to visit me to keep your ratio at 1-1? And here's the answer, quote, "Actually, we would have to travel and visit several people, especially your sister, as we prefer to keep our ratio well above one." Okay, enough of that. That's the answer. I found it funny at the time back in 2006. And just remembering it, it's still a little funny. Okay, so now we come to the last paragraph in this laughing feelings. Okay, so quote, "This question-answer pair has several misapprehensions in it, all of which are deliberate. The first misapprehension is that both the question and answer parts treat the file sharing upload-download ratio as if it also applies to visits between people. The second misapprehension in the answer part turns the idea of reciprocal visits between people, introduced by the question part, into the idea of the guys from the Pirate Bay showing up to have sex with the questioner's sister. So this question-answer pair has a real 1-2 punch in terms of misapprehensions, with the first misapprehension in the question part serving as the setup for an even bigger misapprehension in the answer part. Well, anyway, it certainly made me laugh. Okay, so next part is the crying feeling. Quote, "The crying feeling, which I have already described in a previous footnote, is a neutral feeling that is neither painful nor pleasant. In terms of its purpose, the crying feeling is like the laughing feeling. Both feelings signal something to the awareness and also to the awareness of others when one outwardly does the action that is closely associated with that feeling. For the laughing feeling, that action is laughing. For the crying feeling, that action is crying or becoming teary-eyed. The laughing feeling signals detection of a misapprehension, but the crying feeling is harder to pin down regarding what it is signaling, because based on my own experience with the crying feeling, it has many different triggering causes, including good things and also bad things. It seems that most humans start out with a substantial allocation for the crying feeling, because most babies will cry as a signal to others when hungry or in pain or experiencing discomfort. Small children are also prone to crying, especially when they suffer physical hurt or injury. For a typical person, probably no later than puberty, at least some of that crying feeling allocation is reallocated elsewhere. And the things that trigger the crying feeling also change, at least to some extent. In my own case, from my teen years onward, considering how rarely I felt the crying feeling, it seems that by my early teens at the latest, most of my previous allocation for the crying feeling had been reallocated elsewhere. From my teen years onward, prior to the large decline in my ambition and sexual interest at age 48 and a half, and the consequent reallocation, which included a large increase in my crying feeling allocation, I had only cried or felt like crying 4 times in my life, and each time it was about something very bad. However, after that large increase in my crying feeling allocation, I have felt the crying feeling many times, sometimes also becoming teary-eyed or crying a little when watching certain things in Japanese anime and non-anime shows. As a rule, at least in my own case, triggering causes seem to be almost exclusively moments when either family togetherness wins against obstacles, or friendship wins against obstacles, or lovers win against obstacles. These are good things that I have the crying feeling for, in sharp contrast to when I had a much smaller allocation for the crying feeling, and only certain very bad things were sufficient to trigger that crying feeling. Based on my own experience with the crying feeling, and also after thinking about examples of when others cry, it appears that the crying feeling is signaling to the awareness that the unconscious mind considers the triggering cause as something important that affects survival within a community. Thus, the purpose of the crying feeling is ultimately to promote community development and stability. Typically, the community is some local community of 2 or more people, such as family, friends, lovers, fellow workers, a workplace community, and so on. The neutrality of the crying feeling, being neither painful nor pleasant, is consistent with that feeling being triggered by both good things, things that promote survival within a community, and bad things, things that work against survival within a community. Note that it would be inconsistent if the crying feeling were painful when triggered by a good thing, and likewise inconsistent if the crying feeling were pleasant when triggered by a bad thing. Thus, it's appropriate that the crying feeling is neither painful nor pleasant. Okay, so let's begin. Okay, so now I'm going to start reading what I wrote about the sadness emotion. Quote, given Melanie's list of triggering causes for the sadness feeling, see the previous footnote, it appears that the common element is a loss of some kind. So, Melanie has felt sad over different kinds of personal loss, including such things as loss of physical possessions, loss of trust, and in parentheses I say betrayal by strangers and friends, close parentheses, loss of social standing, parentheses, embarrassment, poor grades, close parentheses, loss of normal physical appearance, parentheses, being overweight, comma, having acne, close parentheses, loss of normal body integrity, parentheses, suffering an injury, close parentheses, loss of pets, parentheses, deaths, close parentheses, loss of freedom, parentheses, lack of money, close parentheses, loss of other people, parentheses, deaths, close parentheses, and loss of physical comfort, parentheses, being cold, close parentheses. So the sadness feeling is a signal to the awareness that there has been a loss of some kind, and its ultimate purpose is to encourage the awareness to make decisions that will tend to avoid or lessen future losses. According to my niece, sadness is always painful. This is consistent with the sadness feeling always signaling something bad. Sadness is an emotion that, on average, women have more than men. Regarding this gender difference, I recall a quote from a fan-sub non-anime Japanese TV drama series that I recently downloaded and watched in 2006. Quote, women choose life and men choose death, close quote. The context for the above quote was the following. A high school girl is in love with her math teacher, and he is in love with her, but he has a brain tumor that will soon kill him, and he is against having a low chance for success operation that could keep him alive but leave him with serious brain damage and resulting mental losses. So, he's against having the operation, but in the end, when he is close to death, his girlfriend, along with an older woman, successfully work together to get him to agree to have the operation. This older woman is the one who says the above quote. This story ends with hints of a final happy post-operation outcome in which the two lovers are ultimately together again. So, what does this quote have to do with the sadness feeling? Well, if one has an allocation for the sadness feeling, sadness is something to be avoided because sadness is a painful feeling. My niece was saddened by death, so on that basis alone, she would be inclined to choose life-preserving actions for someone close to her, because she knows from her own experience that death makes her sad. The above quote was memorable to me because upon hearing it, I realized I was thinking like a man, since in the same situation I would choose death too. Since I have never felt sadness myself, I haven't had the kind of pro-life reinforcement that Melanie has had as a result of her being saddened by death. Okay, so that's the end of what I had written about sadness. It's also covered in an earlier footnote. The next emotion is anxiety, and this is the last of the 10 emotions in this list. Okay, quote, in the course of writing this footnote, after I had written the text for the 9 emotions listed above, I asked the same friend who more than a year previously had made the point that fear had a purpose, if there was any emotion I had missed. He suggested anxiety, and he made it sound like a real feeling which in his case happens in certain social situations in which he gets this anxiety feeling and wants to flee the scene. Thus, the apparent purpose of this anxiety feeling is to encourage avoidance of certain social situations that pose some kind of difficulty for that person. I haven't felt anxiety myself, at least not an intense anxiety like he has sometimes felt, although I do remember having been nervous a few times in my teens when facing certain social situations I didn't want. For example, I remember that in high school, there were a few times when everyone in the class had to prepare and give a talk to the whole class about some subject approved by the teacher, and I always felt nervous right before having to give my talk. I guess feeling nervous in a social situation is an example of the anxiety feeling. Regarding anxiety's place on the pleasure-pain scale, it has to lie on the pain side because feeling nervous is unpleasant. Presumably, the more intense the anxiety feeling, the worse it feels. Regarding gender difference, it seems that on average, the anxiety feeling is more heavily allocated to women than men because displays of high anxiety levels, including such things as so-called panic attacks, seem to be more common among women than men. Okay, so that ends all I had to say about the anxiety emotion. Okay, so we're done with the 10 emotions and their description and the purpose of each of those 10 emotions. And now follows the remainder of footnote 157. Quote, for the 10 emotions listed above, 7 emotions, depression, happiness, fear, loneliness, the crying feeling, sadness, and anxiety are each, on average, more heavily allocated to women than men. And the other 3 emotions, anger, joy, and the laughing feeling, are each, on average, more heavily allocated to men than women. Some readers may wonder why I didn't include love in the above list of emotions. Specifically, I mean love between men and women, the underlying purpose of which is to bring forth new children. The reason is that there is no specific unique feeling associated with being in love. In other words, one doesn't know that one's in love by virtue of having the love feeling, because there is no specific love feeling. Instead, being in love is typically characterized by such things as thinking a lot about the loved one and being strongly attracted to that loved one. As an aside about love, in my latter 20s, I read a magazine article in which the author remarked that everyone falls in love 2.5 times in their life, and she was basing this on her own experience and the experience of her friends. I have long since forgotten what that article was about, but that remark about falling in love 2.5 times has been memorable for me because it was also true in my own case. I had fallen in love a total of 3 different times, 3 different females, and my last time was only about half as intense as the first 2 times. I am now much older than when I read that article, but that half-love I had in my early mid-20s is still the last time I was in love. I guess the reason the last love is less intense is because it's a transition from full love to no love. Okay, so now we come to this paragraph that I wrote for the 12th edition based on my experience with my elderly parents. Quote, with a baby born to parents comes the parent-child bond, and a different context in which the word love is often used in the English language. However, there is no specific unique feeling associated with a mother or father having love for their child or with a child having love for his or her parents. Instead, when a need for help is involved, this love is characterized by one being inwardly compelled by one's unconscious mind to help one's child or parent who needs help. And the strength of this inward compulsion, given how intensely a given person can feel this inward compulsion, which depends on that person and also surrounding circumstances, is roughly proportional to the perceived importance and urgency of the help needed. The most common example is a baby or young child dependent on and in need of help from his or her parents, since we all start off in life as completely dependent, helpless babies. A less common example is the case of an independent grown child who finds himself inwardly compelled to help his elderly parents as they become increasingly dependent and helpless due to complications of advancing old age. I experienced this myself beginning in early 2006 and continuing for years afterwards up until their respective deaths. The more my parents needed help from me, the more I found that I wanted to help them. I was inwardly compelled by my unconscious mind to help them. Early on in my care of my parents, I realized that the parent-child bond is completely symmetric. Not only is a parent inwardly compelled to help his or her dependent baby or child, but this same inward compulsion drives a child to help his or her parent if and when that parent needs help. The primary purpose of the parent-child bond is to bring help as needed between a parent and child, and which one, parent or child, currently needs help can change over the course of time. Regarding being inwardly compelled by one's unconscious mind to help one's child or parent when help is needed, it certainly appears that, on average, women are more inwardly compelled than men. And, given the gender basis of the three races, section 9.2, it follows that the African race is least inwardly compelled, the Oriental race is most inwardly compelled, and the Caucasian race is in between. My study of the three races confirms this. Okay, so I just read the paragraph I added for the 12th edition. Okay, continuing with the following paragraph. Quote, regarding emotions, the same argument used to reject love as an emotion, being the lack of a specific unique feeling, can be used to reject other things that one might otherwise think of as being an emotion. For example, hate is not an emotion because there is no specific unique feeling associated with hating something or someone. Anger is probably the one emotion that people will most often associate with hate, but anger is not hate. If one has an allocation for anger, one may perhaps feel anger at different times against some hated object. However, one could truthfully say that they hate someone or something, even if they never feel anger towards that hated object, because hate is an intellectual judgment in the sense of being a statement of strong opposition or rejection. In addition to love and hate, by using the same argument, none of the following are emotions either: pride, kindness, gratitude, appreciation, veneration, despair, hope, cowardice, bravery, jealousy, envy, affection, and friendship. Others can add to this list of non-emotions since it's not complete. Regarding feelings, in addition to the body feelings category and the emotions category, another category is the other feelings category, which is a catch-all for any feeling that is neither a body feeling nor an emotion. More specifically, other than body feelings and emotions, any feeling that serves as a signal from the unconscious mind to the awareness, alerting the awareness to whatever it is that one is having that feeling about, that feeling can be put in this other feelings category. This category includes such miscellaneous items as the following. If I've left anything out that belongs in this list, feel free to add it. Okay, so what follows is a list of three items. Okay, so the first entry is, quote, intuition and so-called hunches or gut feelings. Okay, the next entry is, quote, the feeling that you have forgotten something without being able to consciously remember what exactly it is that you have forgotten. Okay, that's something I get. Get more than I would like. Then the third item here, quote, the feeling that something is different from what you remember without consciously knowing what exactly is different. For example, feeling that a person you haven't seen in a while is different without consciously knowing what is different. Perhaps that person's hair was cut or colored differently or something like that. Okay, so at long last, we're at the end. That was the last of footnote 157.